Welcome to the Pinkleton Pull Aside podcast. On this podcast, let's step aside from our busy lives to have fun, fascinating, life-giving conversation with inspiring authors, pastors, sports personalities, and other influencers, leaders, and followers. Sit back, grab some coffee, or head down the road, and let's get the good and gold from today's guest. Here's Jeff Pinkleton, Executive Director of the Gathering of the Miami Valley, where their mission is to connect men to men and men to God.
Hello, friends. Welcome again today to another episode of the Pinkleton Pull Aside podcast, where we like to talk all things life, leadership, lessons therein. And we like to do that in the spaces of sports, of comedy, of music, of books, authors, pastors, business, folks with great stories and testimonies. And I'm going to have trouble with this one today. We are talking to Sarah Haggerty, who is a writer, got a new book out that I'm excited about. One of the women I'm friends with read this and said, I can't wait to read it again. So The Gift of Limitations is clearly a good book. But as we talked offline before we got on here, we know a lot of people. We're going to throw out some names: Ryan and Libby Snow, Sarah and John Markman, Rob and Jenny Rue. The list goes on and on. So you better be good when you're listening to this podcast, because you never know when it'll come back. The power of the microphone, the power of a radio station, and Sarah's powerful words, we might get you.
We might tell some stories.
All right. So here we're out of the gate. We're going. Sarah, tell me one story about one of these people. I want a story about somebody we've talked about off air that you know. You went to high school with Libby. You know her and Ryan. You're super close to Sarah and John, doing life with them over Kansas City area, neck of the woods. You know the Rues not as much, so I guess they're probably left off.
Met them. They've been on my back porch.
That's a significant place. That's key to intimacy at a house. Back porch is very key. So give me a story, something funny, something good about one of those folks.
I need something juicy about Libby, but hopefully that's going to come to me maybe at the end.
You're going to know better than I do.
I got to reach back in the archives for that.
You got a funny Ryan.
So I don't have funny, but I will say, Sarah Markman, it's been so fun. So we were at college together and never met. And we met in my house in Kansas City at a parenting class. And both of us were like, whoa, you went to this Friday prayer meeting every week at Seth's Chapel. And so did I. And we never met. And who knew? Like, we intersected all throughout college and then met in Kansas City. And she is one of my dearest friends.
So that means you were Miami from when to when?
95 to 99.
Time out. So you were there, I think. Did you go to what I still say today is one of the greatest concerts of all time at, not Millette, it would have been at wherever Crew met, the Cademan's Call, Andrew Peterson, Bebo Norman concert. Did you go to that?
No. Hey, Andrew Peterson too. I don't think that was while I was there, because I would have gone.
I feel like it must have just been after you left or something. That was... Maybe. To this day, one of the greatest concerts ever. When it came out.
Yeah, I think I would have remembered, because I actually saw Cademan's Call in Charlottesville, like outdoors, 150 of us. It was so cool. So I do have actually a really cool and weird and fun story about Sarah Markman.
Okay,
so
let's hear it.
She has a birthday here in Kansas City a few years after we met, and she's inviting friends from different social circles. We all sit down to lunch on her birthday, maybe Panera, and somebody brings up one day in Sherman, Texas. Okay. And Sarah says, oh, I was there. And I'm like, oh, how funny. I was living in Virginia and I was there. And another girl living in Colorado goes, no way, I was there.
Get out of here.
And another girl sitting at lunch, also in Virginia, I was there. And another girl who at that point in time, I feel like was living in Arkansas, I was there. Every single person at the table had 15 years earlier been at one day in Sherman, Texas. Isn't that crazy?
That is so wild.
We started a Bible study, just us, because we went, what else? Yeah. How weird. We all happened to, from all these different states, intersect in Sherman, Texas.
That's cool. What was the Bible study you did? Do you remember the first thing you did?
Oh, Oh, I feel like we studied Proverbs or an Ortland book on Proverbs was maybe the first thing we did.
You mean that was Ray Ortland or Dane Ortland or which
It
Ortland?
was Ray, and
Okay.
he has a really great book on Proverbs, and I
Okay.
can't remember the name of it, but I think that's the first one we did. Yeah.
I just quoted Ray Ortland in my sermon I preached yesterday. That's so funny that we would say that.
His stuff is, I mean, that I think maybe that's the main book I identify with of his work, but I love Wisdom That Works, maybe. I don't know.
Okay.
You might want to look it up to make sure I'm quoting the
See,
right
you've already
person.
added
Yeah.
value to me. I've got stories about people I know and a book I should check out. That's really
It's a
good.
great book.
So here's a funny Cadman's Call story for you. So I took my wife, I think this was soon after we got married, to Bluffton College in Bluffton, Ohio, to go see Cadman's Call. And Cadman's Call over the years had several times because of weather or when Danielle was pregnant or something like that, where like the band would show up, but like part of the band wasn't there. So this particular time, Cliff and Danielle weren't there because she had some kind of complication or something, nothing that ended a life, but some kind of pregnancy challenge. So she missed like two or three shows on a tour. So we're in Bluffton, and Derek makes some joke about, well, most of the songs that you know through the radio are songs that Cliff sings. The ones that are kind of edgier and not the radio songs are mine. So we'll just kind of go for it, see what happens. And who knows, you could throw something out crazy and we might end up doing it. Well, I knew this little story about Young Life days back in the day at camp. And when Derek was there, some interest he had in other music. So I scream at one point in the middle of concert. Now, I would do this now at 54. Definitely was doing it back in my late 20s, mid 20s, whatever that was. And I yell out real loud, "Backstreet Boys." And my wife's looking at me like, "What?" And people are looking around like, "Backstreet Boys at a Cadman's Call." And what do you think happened?
He broke out in it.
And what song though?
Oh, I mean,
So how cool you are, Sarah. Which
it's
one?
well, I would say I want it that way, but I think it's probably got to be off the beaten path if he's going to do that.
100%. It was "I Want It That Way." So one of the greatest songs of all time. I have a boy band fetish. I'm not going to deny it, even at 54. But he busted out, and then people around me start high-fiving me like crazy, thinking, "How random that you just threw out Backstreet." Well, I knew I'd heard from people
He
at Young
knew
Life
he could
camp.
do it, but he did it off the
Yeah,
cuff.
he
That
loved.
is fun.
Yeah, it was such a
Okay, boy
great moment.
band fetish. You know who's great in concert is Big Time Rush.
Okay, now I'm going to show you my age. I'm not even sure who Big Time Rush is.
Well, go look him up. He Los, who's in it, Pennevega, is actually a friend of ours.
Oh,
So
cool.
that's full disclosure. I wouldn't probably have gone to a boy band concert had I
Okay.
not had a personal connection, but they are awesome in concert. I went like, why have I waited 30 years to
Yeah.
go back to a boy band concert?
Well, I've seen New Kids on the Block twice, right before they got big, and then once they got really big, saw NSYNC with Debbie Gibson, and it only gets
Oh.
credibility because I threw in Debbie Gibson as well. And then what's the one, the brothers from 98 Degrees? I'm picturing Nick and what's his,
Yep.
Nick Lachey. I met Drew Lachey at their old sports bar restaurant in Cincinnati, so I was proud to say, "Hey, there's me and Drew Lachey on social media."
That is so
So,
cool.
Sarah, this
Yeah,
is
one
not
of
why you came on,
my
by the way.
best.
If you would have known this, you might have made sure this did not ever make it to happen on air. But let's get to some fun stuff about you. Give us your 3-minute testimony. How did you come to Jesus? What was going on in your life when you came to know the Lord?
3-minute testimony. I grew up in a Catholic home. My mom, very devout, loved God. Grew up going to Catholic school and mass every Sunday. Those things that I deeply appreciate now that I didn't appreciate then. But I went to a Young Life camp because there were cute boys there for a fall weekend. And I got hooked in under the stars of Michigan, the starry sky in Michigan Camp Store, November 13th. I can't remember the exact year. I feel like it was 92 probably. I asked God into my heart as a high school sophomore and kind of was a little, tipping my toe in the water here and there, showing up to campaigners occasionally again because of the cute boys. But then it was like that following summer, I went to Young Life Camp at Lake Saranac and
Oh.
heard the gospel again, realized this is for me, this is what I want to do and what I want to pursue. And just started following God as a high schooler. And had a lot of hard knocks in my 20s and 30s, probably like a lot of people. Didn't think that life and I thought life and God meant upward, onward, all the time better. And really found in my 20s probably what it really meant to have true connect with God when my life wasn't what I thought it would be.
Wow. So my heart leapt there, skipped a beat. Two things you said. One, Saranac, which I went to several times. Love Saranac. Champion is my favorite because it's my first. That's Young Life Camp language for those of you that don't know what that is. And then when you said the date that you came to Jesus, it made me think of the song I love by Mac Powell called 1991. He wrote a song about him coming to Christ. And I'm like, how cool would that be? Can I get Mac Powell to write one about my salvation date? But when you said it, I thought, I think he could do it for Sarah.
I got to go look that up.
Yeah. So I got to ask
song
you this.
It's called
1991. It's a great song. I can send you the link to it later. But since we both have a past and a love and an infatuation and probably much deeper hearts for Young Life, what do you look back and think now most happened in your life that God used because of the ministry of Young Life?
Oh, gosh, so much. I mean, my husband and I probably on the regular will say now we learned how to do relationships because of Young Life. Mm-hmm. Like we learned how to intersect with all sorts of people in all sorts of walks of life because, you know, as a high school junior and senior, it was really normal at our school that if you were a junior and senior and you were walking with God, you spent your part of your time reaching out to freshmen and sophomores who didn't know God. And so it's made us really fluent. And even nowadays, kind of wanting to teach our kids what it looks like to be in the lives of non-believers really comfortably while not sacrificing what you believe, but being a light for God. I mean, I think that's one of the main things. Like just even simply like knowing how to share the gospel, that feels pretty significant that I learned that at a young age.
Yeah. I love all the stuff you said relationally. And I think those were kind of intentional things for me. I think the other two things that were huge for me was learning people's names and knowing people's names and saying their name often and going up. And I'm a big believer. Everybody's favorite word is their own name.
That's right.
And I think the other thing is not taking yourself so seriously. That huge gift of Young Life to me.
I miss even these days, I miss the humor of Young Life. Like I just think some of my funniest times, the most fun times, the times I've laughed the most have been in a Young Life context.
Well, I'm kind of jealous of you that you've had Young Life ties to both Ohio and Virginia. Cause I know back in the early 90s it was longer than this, but to late 90s, particularly going to Young Life camp and thinking, gosh, does anybody have Young Life in other states besides Ohio and Virginia? Like Ohio and Virginia dominated it.
That's right. Yep.
Well, let's jump.
Well, that's kind of how I got whisked away from Ohio is another Ohio staff person who I met because of a friend who was on work crew with me, who is still to this day, one of my very best friends. He moved to Virginia and said, hey, you want to come think about going on staff in Virginia? And that's actually where I met my husband. We were leaders at the same high school.
Oh, wow. I love those stories. Yeah. Young Life come together. I know Brad Johnson, you probably remember that name, was Young Life staff guy in Cincinnati. I've heard this many a times. He used to tell his leaders that they would each have a prayer partner for the school year. And he said, but it's got to be same sex because if it's a man and a woman, you'll end up falling in love with each other because prayer is more intimate than sex, he would say.
Yeah, Nate and I weren't supposed to date, but at that point in time, I was on staff and he was out of college, so it wasn't like we were really breaking all the rules.
Gotcha. Okay. Well, so tell us more what you're up to now, because you have, I'm not a big fan of just telling people that are too busy or they got so much going on, like we all have stuff going on, but you have stuff going on. So talk about your place in life.
Well, I have 7 kids, I'll just say that, and you know, let everybody take a pause and go, this woman's crazy. My oldest is 20. My youngest is 4. So I'm going to be raising teenagers essentially for the rest of my life. I did Young Life and thought those were my investment in the teenage years. Little did I know I'd spend 23 years straight raising teenagers. I'm also a writer. I always say I moonlight as a writer because so much of my life is my kids and my life and my home. And so I find these kind of random pockets and corners to write. That's a passion of mine. And I just had a book come out called The Gift of Limitations. Title pretty much explains it, and it's kind of the life that I'm living.
Well, there's no doubt about that. You've also got Unseen, Every Bitter Thing is Sweet, and Adore. What about this book particularly gets you fired up, and what would you like God to do with it? Because I think you look at our church culture, you look what's out there in books, it seems like there's a lot of stuff about rest, about boundaries, about identity, about contentment, and yours kind of hits on all those things. So what separates your book and what gets you really fired up about this particular book?
I don't know what separates it as much as I know that this is my favorite book that I've written. And I think that's probably natural for authors. As you get older, you bring more experience into your writing, both in the craft and in the living. What do I want God to do with it? I had so much deep connection with God as I wrote. I wrote this during one of the most pressing seasons in my life. And many of us shut off our creativity when life is stressful. We do it accidentally. We don't necessarily do it intentionally, but it just is. If life is stressful, the thing that goes out the door is creativity. And in this season, I didn't have the luxury to do that because I was on the books for finishing a book. And so I really feel like, wow, God, you and I did this together. Mm-hmm. This feels like a work that was really fun and really sweet respite in the midst of pressing times. I'd love it if the fruit of people reading would be a fun, sweet respite in the midst of their own pressing times.
Wow. You know, I love the simplicity of that. That doesn't seem so bold and bodacious that it seems unrealistic. Like that's just, I love how you use the word sweet there. So let me ask you this. We started off talking about you, Bible study offline, getting connected with people, whatever. Matthew 11, 28 through 30. I just preached about that. That passage, I don't understand how pastors speak every Sunday. I know for me, when I preach a handful of times each year, the Lord just takes that scripture and just penetrates bones, marrow, my soul, and says, you're going to learn this as much as someone possibly can in getting ready to preach to that. So that passage, I bet over the years, that's not an uncommon passage. I bet that's meant something to you. Where would you take that passage of scripture about come to me, all you who are weary, heavy laden, give you rest, soul rest. My burden is easy. My yoke is light. What would that mean for you? And where does that fit into what you're talking about with this book?
I think one of the key things I talk about in the book that I've lived and am currently living in my life is this notion of accepting the story that God has given us. A lot of times, if you say that in certain Christian circles, it can feel like you're actually lacking faith. Mm. Like you're going to just accept your heart and not pray that God delivers you from it, not pray that you become an overcomer. But I think the reality is so many times we think that we're praying in faith when in reality we're scared out of our minds that if something doesn't change, what our life is going to be like. And there's a power to accepting the story that God has given us. So I think of that passage, which has been very significant for me in my own journey. And some of the rest that we find in God is actually just accepting, you've given me a story. I don't love this story. It's not the story that I thought or I dreamed about, but in leaning into accepting that this is the story you've given me, there is a profound rest that comes where I stop trying to change it, stop trying to overcome it, recognize that if there is to be change or overcoming that's going to happen, it will be through your spirit and not through my will. And I lean into your chest.
So let me ask you with that, I think for, you know, I know when I was going through Young Life staff training one year, even though I didn't go on staff, I remember Tom Hammond talking about people get so locked into what they're doing, making X amount of dollars. And he had met people over the years that would say, man, I wish I could do what you do, but I've either gotten to a level I make so much money, or I've got this toy or that toy or stuff or this in life. I can't sacrifice that maybe to do what God really called me to do. There's that side of it. And then there's hopes and dreams that just kind of die off. What are some things in your life, maybe Sarah, where you've looked at, where you've said, yeah, this has maybe happened or been an adjustment and a lot in my life that's allowed you to get to this point to really write and lean into this message in this book?
I mean, practically speaking, having 7 kids, you know, I've wanted a big family, but I don't think I realize the implications of big family, especially as I get older. And my last daughter specifically, my 4-year-old was a total surprise. I had her when I was 42. So I felt like I was 80 and carrying this baby.
Wow.
And leaning into the dream of big family looked different when I didn't really know the implications of long-term trauma. Four of my kids are adopted. What I didn't really realize what it would look like when you had kids 16 years apart, and then actually living it and going, this is really, really hard. And I'm not getting to do some of the things that I want to do with my teenagers because I have little kids, and I'm not getting to do some of the things I want to do with my little kids because I have big kids. And I think there might be something you have for me right here because I'm hedged in and I can't change it. And so what do you have for me right now? I think there's something pretty powerful to going, I can't change this. And so I want to actually see God move right in the midst of it.
So let's take a quote of yours. You say, why are we always trying to look over at someone else's fence line instead of feeling peaceful and content on our own? We do create our own quandrum. I love how the fence line thing is really big for you. I don't know where you landed on that. If you were just outside one day and you said, there's the fence line, and it became a thing. But talk about that quote, and why fence line, why is it vital and good imagery for you to use?
I think most of us live like reacting to our limitations without ever naming them. So like I'm subtly, say I spend 10 minutes on Instagram and I've seen like 15 photos of people who are living different stages of life that I kind of wish I was living, or they have different elements of their life or their home or their marriage or their kids that I wish I had. So I've just spent a certain amount of time looking over the fence line. I'm looking at them, not at my current life. I think we all do that kind of all day long, and not just on Instagram, but like sure. I see somebody else's successes and I'm immediately feeling like, well, why am I not there? I see someone else's ministry exploits and I'm thinking, why am I not making that kind of impact for the kingdom of God? And so there's something significant to actually naming we have a fence line around our life. And it means some things are kept inside and some things are kept from me and on the outside. And there's something significant about just naming our limitations, because I think we live reacting to them and never naming them. But if I can name them, then I can start to go, what do you want me to do with them, God?
See, I think what's interesting about what you're talking about is I know we live in a culture, you see it at every high school graduation ceremony. We can do it all. You can take on everything. You're going to be victorious. I spoke at my high school's commencement, I think it was in 2016. And one of the things I said was, one of the lies people will tell you here is you can do whatever you want. And at that point in my life, I was 46. And I said, guess what? I can't be a quarterback in the NFL. I can want it all day. It is not going to happen. And I think we live in a world where status, I said in my email I sent to you, 5 S's, sports, scholarship, salary, stuff, and status all really mean something to people. And I find, at least for me, and I know this goes against the way the American dream people are trying to live, that me knowing what my lane is and staying in it and not detouring, not trying to do everything, is really helpful. How has that worked for you? And why do you think we feel that need to try to be anything and everything all the time to everybody and add the check marks and, you know, one more personal best, one more? Because I think as parents, if we're wearing a parent hat, to me, we're sending a pretty rough message to our kids.
Oh, yeah, yeah, absolutely. I love that you said that at a graduation speech. I think our culture continues to reaffirm to us that we can overcome everything and that we can optimize and do whatever we want. I mean, somebody tomorrow can write a book using AI. Like, we can just do it in an instant. So we have this understanding that, like, I can accomplish, I can overcome anything. And I think what it feeds in us is this deep down sense of unsettledness with our weakness. And yet Paul says, I'm going to boast more about my weaknesses. He says in Corinthians, I'm going to boast more about my weaknesses because when I am weak, then I am strong. God's power is made perfect in my weakness. But we despise our weaknesses. We hate them. We don't ever name that we hate them, but we hate them. And we work so hard against them. And at 46, I'm going, you know what? My girlfriends are all going to go on a girls' weekend. And I've got 2 teenagers graduating and I have a 4-year-old. There's no way that I can do that. And instead of just constantly trying to figure out how I can be in all places at all times, I'm slowly starting to go, I'm human and I get tired and I need sleep and I have limitations. And the more I lean into those, the more I actually start to find a deep rest of God. Mm.
So let me ask you this. You're probably familiar, I would imagine, with Jenny Allen. Is that fair to say?
Oh, yeah. I actually know her personally.
Oh, cool. Well, I'd love to know what you think about this then. So she's obviously developing a bit of a good ministry, if you will, college young adults. I feel like big time Auburn, yeah. Kids go to Texas A&M, whatever. I heard her on a podcast today driving up here. And I think what you're saying about weakness and about authenticity and being broken and confession, she's been speaking a lot about confession.
Yeah.
Do you see that? Does that fit pretty well with what you think your message is, to tie it to what Jenny Allen's is about this?
I think there's a theme happening across the body of Christ where we are tired. And we are realizing we have, I mean, to speak to her message, we are realizing we have emotions way bigger than we've given permission or voice to. And so it's, in some senses, I think this is maybe something God is doing across the body of Christ. When you see different people getting similar messages of what does it look like to just be honest with myself, to be honest about my limitations, to be honest about my emotions, and see God meet me in who I really am, not the person I want to present myself as.
Wow. So let me ask you, when we talk about the fence line and looking at the other side, I mean, if I started throwing, we talked about Amy Seyfert before, Jenny Allen. I mean, there's obviously a lot of people, Sadie Robertson, yourself. There's, I mean, bunches of people we could talk in a certain wavelength there. And you doing what you do in your writing career, Do you start struggling with that at all? Do you think, okay, I want my book?
Oh my goodness. Every human does. I mean, I think anytime you get put in a lane where other people also have a similar calling or a similar expression of their walk with God, I think it's nearly impossible to not do comparison. It's been really fun that this is my fourth book. So I've gotten to watch my journey through it. And recently, I think just with some of the exposure that's coming in the larger body of Christ, of just seeing what happens when some of the platforms that God gives get abused, seeing that in a real local level for me has really helped me go, maybe it's a gift at times that I can't be superhero mom and superhero writer at the same time. And I'm going to have the limited audience that God gives me, and I'm going to do what I love with him. And it may not make the big splash that I thought it would at one point in time. And that's actually just a gift because I'm one human, not three.
So let me ask you, in the midst of, I like right now questions. So right now, 2024, 1 to 10, can't say 7. What is your 10 being off the charts great? What is your contentment level?
Oh, that's such a good question. You know, I would say I can't say 7. You just said I can't say 7.
Can't say 7. That's the Tim Ferriss says you can't say 7 on 1 to 10 questions.
Terrible. Because that's what I would say.
Yeah, that's the go-to answer for everybody on anything.
Okay, so I think I'd say 8 because, well, here's a little story. So I wrote this book on limitations, turned my manuscript in to my editor, and a month later I was diagnosed with Lyme disease. And if you know Lyme disease, it's not fun. And my son was also diagnosed with Lyme disease, as was my husband. My son and I actually both have it the worst out of the three of us. And I thought, here it is. Like, I wrote this book about our limitations, and now I get to read it for the audiobook, reread it again for edits, and really see, like, do I actually believe this message now that I'm aware that I'm even more limited physically? Wow. And as I read it, I started to go, I mean, I cried through reading it going, actually, this is part of God's message for me. Maybe part of why I wrote it was for myself to reread it again and go, I'm even more limited than I was when I wrote this manuscript. And I am finding that you can actually find peace in your limitations. I mean, I wrote some of the narratives that I wrote about in the book were things that I had interceded for and prayed for and just put my whole life on the line, like, God, you've got to move here. This is such a good and godly and beautiful thing. And watching God not move in the way that I thought, and accepting that this part of my story is not changing, and actually in the acceptance is a greater peace than if I actually got what I wanted. And then rereading this book with Lyme disease going, oh, my body is really compromised. And I'm experiencing again that even in it really being compromised, there is still the fruits that God offers to those of us who are limited available. So I would say, man, there's a lot of heart in my life right now, a lot. And I am starting to go, this might be the invincibility that I wanted in my 20s. I thought I would be invincible by overcoming everything. I didn't realize that there's an invincibility that comes to those who go, whatever you send my way, God, I actually am going to find you.
So you wrote the book, you finished it. How much longer until you did the audio of it?
I finished it in March or April, did edits through the summer, and then recorded the audiobook just this past January.
Okay. And then you found out in between about you having Lyme's disease.
Yeah.
So what was that on a deep heart level? What was that like to read that book then out loud when you're in a studio?
I mean, I cried through it. I cried because I just thought, I mean, I felt a little bit of trepidation because even writing it, I thought I'm writing it as someone who's pretty limited, and I didn't share. There's a lot. I mean, I share pretty vulnerably, but there's a lot of behind closed doors stories I would not share in a book that I'd only write in my journal and share with my husband.
Wow.
But I still am aware that I have friends who are greatly limited, way more than I am. And so I felt a little trepidation, like I'm touching a subject that, like, there's probably people better equipped than I am to write it. So then reading it again, being more physically limited, my body had been sick. I write a lot about being sick in the book because my body had been sick for a long time. The diagnosis actually was just an answer. Like, finally, we understand why my body is so sick. But in reading it again, I just felt this sense of these, and not to toot my own horn, I just really want to say this. I felt like a message of God. Like, I'm reading it again going, this is what I need. This is the message I need. Like, I'm not only going to make it, but these are maybe going to be some of the richest years of my life, even though they might be some of the most limited years of my life.
So not to put your book on a level of scripture, but did you feel like this was Holy Spirit inspired? And now as you're reading it out loud, the book is ministering, it sounds like, back to you again.
In some ways, yeah. I mean, it's funny that you say that. I always think of a friend of mine who's a writer who said, like, you never know when something you're writing is anointed. And mm-hmm. it's really true. Like, there are times that people will reference certain parts of my book, and I'll remember, like, I was sitting at Starbucks with, like, my earbuds in, and it was really loud. And I was so uninspired writing that. And then there's other things that I wrote where I just thought, this is God. And, you know, no, it doesn't resonate. So sure. I don't know that I can determine how much the Holy Spirit was in it. But I know for myself writing it, it really felt like this sweet partnership with God.
Well, and by no means do I wish you had a disease like that. But I love how God works that, okay, you have it, you writing it, and then where it's ministering to you again and what that's going to mean for other people. And, you know, I love the, you know, it's kind of like when you said that about not knowing where you were sitting and, okay, is this going to work? Oh, that sounds great. Maybe it didn't resonate. It reminds me of Young Life contact work, like going up and hanging out time and time again, going after this kid, going after this kid, and then nothing happened. And then a kid I practically blew off, like sells out to Jesus and is on staff or something. It's like, what? Come on, God, how does this whole...
Dynamic. Oh, I had that. A girl who I ran into who had been in a campaigners, and I ran into her actually in a different city, totally random. And she is like wholeheartedly walking with the Lord. And I'm thinking back to my experiences with her thinking, I just thought she'd never really carry her faith at all. I had no idea.
Yeah. God keeps us so humble with stuff like that. So we're going to go for a pretty radical shift here. I got these five rapid five questions. They're pretty light. They're pretty fun. First thing that comes to mind, Sarah, what is your favorite childhood snack or cereal?
Gummy bears, but not the green ones. And anyone who loves gummy bears can attest to that. I mean, we got like the 5-pound bag from Sam's Club, but I never ate the green ones.
Wow. I've never been into gummy bears, but I do know since you went to Miami, Miami used to always be one of the top food places in the country for colleges and universities with food. Really? Yeah. Oh, ouch. You're going to,
I mean, late night bagel and deli, 1 a.m. I loved it, but I wouldn't have thought that, you know, it's a hole in the wall. But
well, you answered my question. Never mind. Forget that question. You just answered it without even knowing it. So what is your favorite book outside of the Bible or outside of one of your own that you most like to gift to other people?
Ooh, maybe Jane Eyre. Maybe.
I should know that, but I don't. I know I do, but
it's a classic. But that's one I've really loved to gift. I like to get, you know, Barnes and Noble has the classics.
Oh,
and
yeah.
Copies.
Cool. They have the cool looking book covers on those.
Yep.
I know what you're talking about there. Then okay, so here's a good one for you. This is very appropriate for your life now. Have you been out west much?
A little, yeah.
Okay, so this will work for you. Your family's vacationing. One of your kids says, "Hey, mom, dad, I need to go to the bathroom." It's 10 minutes sooner than you had planned to stop for lunch, and so you're like, "We're not getting off now. Getting off 10 minutes later."
It's going to be a good question.
It's going to be a great question. I've had some of the best answers ever on the podcast to this. You see on the exit sign, McDonald's, Chick-fil-A, In-N-Out Burger. Where do you go?
Chick-fil-A, it's going to be the cleanest bathroom.
Wow. I've gotten a lot of good answers to that, but it never had to do with the bathroom.
But I have to let you know of our best road trip trick.
What's that?
So we always stop at hotels.
For the bathroom?
For the bathroom. And my husband is shameless and he'll say, "I'm just stopping here for the bathroom, but I have 7 kids. Could I also have a cup of coffee?" And he gets it.
Sarah, can you please text my wife? She thinks I'm a total goofball for doing the same thing. Nobody's ever validated that to her. I'm going to give you Kara.
Clean bathrooms.
Kara Pinkleton needs to hear this.
Because she's not stepping on like toilet paper on the ground. I mean, you know, there's so many. They have to keep those bathrooms clean.
They're big. They're nice. Yeah. And maybe they'll throw you the cup of coffee.
And then there's free coffee.
Sarah, for every reason I thought I liked you before, I really like what. And your husband's Nate? No. Is it Nate?
Nate. Right.
I'm sure I'm going to like
Nate,
him too.
Nate only obliges. I mean, Nate would do like the dankest random gas station to go to the bathroom, but he does it because he loves me, but also because of the free coffee.
I love that. I love that you answer that. Thank you. Kara Pinkleton, that just validated me. Movie that every time you stumble upon it, even in streaming days, you stumble across this movie, you got to watch it. What is it?
Pride and Prejudice, hands down. Kara Knightley one. Over and over and over and over and over again.
My wife and daughter would both love you for that answer. Here's the important one. Always gets a good response. Your first celebrity crush.
River Phoenix or Will Wheaton. It's a tie.
Oh my gosh. River Phoenix. I told you. Will Wheaton? I'm blanking on that.
I know. So they are Stand By Me.
Both.
River Phoenix is no longer alive.
Oh, that's true. Yeah.
Probably selling insurance. I don't know. Yeah. I don't think he's selling movies.
Yeah, I totally can picture River Phoenix. I can't picture Will Wheaton though. Mm-hmm. Oh, well, we'll move on.
That's... I mean, I had a whole notebook full of, you know, bop pictures of
River Phoenix. There you go. There you go. So let's talk about writing. How do you figure out kind of what's next? Is it simply time with Jesus and you're growing in discipleship? Is it something you're seeing in a current culture space? Maybe something that's a holy frustration? Are you picking up conversations you're having with people as you're doing life? How do you say, okay, this is what I want to write about?
I think it's probably all of those. I think writers by nature are observers. You know, I think some of the best poets are people who could probably walk through a shopping mall and observe things that most people never see because they just are looking and watching. And so I, although I don't actively do this, I tend to, when I'm in a preparing to write a book mode, I tend to be on hyper observation mode. What are the things that people around me are telling me as their pain points? And not necessarily that I write a book according to someone else's pain points, but what are the things that other people are saying that I'm going, yes, that's me too. I feel that inside of me. I mean, I think my first book was, I wrote it intended to just literally slide it between my mattress and my box springs and have no one ever see it. So that just came from deep in my heart. And then my next book after that, life experiences combined with what I saw around me, what I was observing, they just a synergy kind of in terms of me going, I think this is what God's putting in my heart. Mm.
So we talked a bit about some of these women who I think God's given a great platform and there's too many to name, but in my world, our tagline is connecting men to men and men to God. We've got 22 small groups that meet around the Miami Valley, Springfield, Dayton area. We've got two women's groups because some women came to me and said, Jeff, we want something like The Gathering that's kind of gritty, grimy, getting each other's lives and space, not, you know, a bunch of 70-year-old women, no disrespect. We want those guys listening who just are going through the Book of Ruth or something like that. What do you see God doing either in your life as you travel, you hear other people talk about it, maybe on an elevated level as women, as friends in community are doing life together?
I think, you know, I keep taking the temperature around me locally, but then also my friends all over the country. And I think people are really hurting. I think we are in times where it's less normal to be in an easy, smooth season than it is what most people are experiencing, which is a lot of unexpected pain and hardship. And so I think there is actually a need for new levels of conversation around what do I do when my life is turning out not like I thought. I just, the kind of pain around me, for a while I thought maybe it's just me, you know, I just, you know, or yeah, you're driving a Jeep, so you see everybody else who drives a Jeep. But I keep asking when I travel or asking friends in different parts of the country, and the general consensus is, man, people are hurting in ways they never thought they could hurt.
Yeah, that seems very fair. And I feel like, yeah, that message has been sent, to say the least. Let me ask you these questions. I'm going to give you four emotions and just give me what comes to mind with those. Sarah, what makes you sad these days?
Watching my kids in pain.
Okay. What makes you smile?
My four-year-old, man, she is the light of all of our lives. She makes me smile like all day long.
Anything particular that she does?
She's spicy. She's got a lot of personality. You know, when she's got an older sister who's 20, she's being raised half the time by teenagers. So she's a big person in a little body, and she's got big curls. Her hair is big and curly, and she just is she's a pistol.
That's cool. Sarah, what makes you laugh? Like belly aching, hearty laughter?
Dry humor, like dry wit. It's like, give me all the people who are subtly funny and I will die.
Wow. Very cool. What makes you angry?
Injustice, in the sense that when I see wrongs not righted. Mm.
We could probably go on for a while about that one, I'm guessing. But Let me ask you this. So I haven't really done this one much, but especially with you being a woman, and we're more and more having women on here, but what would you say to me and to men? What do men need to hear right now in our culture from women? What do you need from us? What do you want from us and particularly men maybe who are trying to pursue Jesus? What do we need to hear?
I would say, I think weak is the new strong. And I think that's really difficult, especially for men. And I just know this from being so connected to my husband. but also my friends and watching my friends with their spouses. I think for men, there is a deep intrinsic desire in them to be strong, which I think is very God-given. But the path to strength oftentimes, if it's godly strength, looks like weakness and vulnerability. And so I just would say, I think women, you know, as wives want parts of their husband's hearts that are the weak parts. It's super messy to get there. And there's a lot of work that has to happen in terms of wife being safe enough to feel those parts. But I am watching my husband with his, you know, salt and pepper beard getting older and older, and appreciating that the older he gets, the more I'm seeing his weakness. And it feels like great strength for our family and for my kids and for me.
You know, what's interesting about what you just said, I'm glad I asked you that, because that was not intended, but I felt like that was a good question to go out on. I had a moment today where I was really kind of feeling it just for something really random that was not that big a deal, but I could feel kind of some grief in something. And I wanted to say something to my wife about it. And then I felt like I was kind of talked out of it, and whether that's a Satan dinging me up or, you know, whatever it was. And I ended up, like I said, it felt really dumb and not that big a deal, but I didn't share it with her. And I'm like, huh. Hearing what you just said right there, I'm like, that probably needs to be shared with Kara.
I think women are such so much more, we process more verbally, naturally. I think for men, it's, you know, it's particularly for married couples. I think for wives, we have work to do being safe, not giving advice, not trying to lead our husbands by the nose, really recognizing when they're vulnerable. Like my husband, the lead out emotion for his vulnerability might be gruffness. But now I know, after lots of years and counseling too, that when he's gruff, there's a tender part underneath him and he needs to actually be fielded softly. But I think it's like creating safe spaces, because I think so many men, it just feels like, you know what, I'll just process this and digest it. Don't need to say it.
Gotcha. So, hey, in 2 weeks when my friend Rob Roo comes out to Kansas City, what barbecue should he be very wise to bring back to me?
Oklahoma Joe's is the one. That's the hole in the wall. That's the best. Okay. I mean, Q39 is pretty incredible, but that's kind of the atmosphere and the sitting there eating your burn ends. But Oklahoma Joe's, man, That's the best in Kansas City.
Rob better be bringing it back to me. I think he probably will. So, Sarah, how can people find out more of what you're up to and find out about writings and other stuff going on in your world?
My book, The Gift of Limitations, you can find it anywhere where books are sold. I write at sarahhagerty.net. Well, you can see some of my writing there. That's my website. But I actually have a Substack, substack.sarahhagerty, and I write pretty regularly there. I'm also on Instagram, Sarah Hagerty Writes.
Love it. Well, I can't wait till the next conversation. I feel like, at least from where I sit, I'd love to have you back on.
Great.
We can have a podcast only about stories about the people we've already mentioned. That would be wonderful.
Yeah, I'll think of something funny about Libby Moan before then.
There you go. Have a great day, Sarah.
Thank you, Jeff.
Thank you for joining us on the Pinkleton Pull Aside podcast. You can reach Jeff at gatheringmiamivalley.org or find us on Facebook at the Gathering of the Miami Valley. Join us again next week for another honest and rich conversation.
The Rise FM Podcast Network.